I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, dealing with loss and grief. It's an inevitable part of life, but oddly, we rarely talk about it and help each other to find the tools to cope and learn to live with the confusion, guilt, unanswered questions, and the painful sense of absence that can feel overwhelming. And dealing with the suicide of a loved one often brings with it the heavy weight of questions that can never be fully answered. Writing, whether in the form of poetry or journaling, can offer a measure of peace, putting thoughts into words, allowing feelings too heavy to carry to be offloaded, to exhale. Local poet and author Cyrus Sweet Dumitru has been there. The Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas is launching Cyrus's latest book, Words That Make a Way Through Fire, Healing After My Brother's Suicide. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Did you know that many employees qualify for a matching gift through their workplace? Getting started is quick, easy, and can significantly boost your support for Texas Public Radio. Visit tpr.org/workplacegiving to see if your employer participates and maximize your impact today. Visit tpr.org/workplacegiving to see if your employer participates and maximize your impact today.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. When confronted with the death of a loved one, how do we carry on? How do we find a path forward when there's all that overwhelming feeling of loss? Does writing, poetry, journaling, does that help? Well, for many, it does. San Antonio poet Cyrus Sweet Dumitru has turned her talents for poetry as she has spent almost her lifetime processing the suicide of her brother. She has a new book, Words Make a Way Through Fire, about that journey. The book is being launched by the South Texas Bereavement Center. Cyrus Sweet Dumitru joins us, and she's with us today. Cyrus, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
Also with us is Adriana McKinnon. She is the San Antonio Chief Program Officer at the Bereavement Center. And Adriana, welcome to The Source.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, good. Cyrus, tell me just about the book overall. How did the book come about in working with the Bereavement Center?
Well, the book has been something that I've been working on off and on for about 27 years. And it began before I realized that I was writing a book. I was writing in order to come to understand the complexity of feelings that I had in the aftermath of the suicide of my eldest brother, David, when he was 19 and I was 16. I naturally turned to poetry as a way to give expression and shape to my feeling, in part because where my family lived at that time was Cincinnati, Ohio. This was 50 years ago, and there was not a Children's Bereavement Center of Cincinnati or South Texas available to help my family and I process our grief in a supportive atmosphere. So that's where the book began, in my need to find equilibrium within myself and not having the social support to do it, so doing it through poetry. That's also the reason why I am just so grateful to be here today in collaboration with the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas, because this is the supportive work that they do, providing support to families who have lost a loved one to suicide or to cancer or various kinds of deaths. So,
we're going to spend some time talking about that in further detail throughout the hour. Our phone lines are open, and we do want to hear from our listeners. You can call in at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have found yourself in a similar situation, if poetry, journaling, watercolors, carpentry, whatever helps you, help your process of dealing your thoughts. I mean, sometimes when I'm working in the garden, and then I'll have things will just bubble up, just taking your mind off the day to, and focusing on things. The things that come out are just, it's helpful. You never know where it's going to come from. But I guess poetry was a way for you to do that, Sarah?
Yes, I started with poetry and with journaling. I already had a practice of journaling and writing poetry when I was 16. And the journal was a place to write down just exactly how things were happening as they were unfolding, the details, the day-to-dayness of what was happening in my family. And then the poems functioned in a different way, in that that was where I could look deeply inward and begin finding a language for what I was feeling inside. So, for example, with suicide loss, there's such a tangle of emotions. There is shock. There is grief. There is confusion. There can be a sense of guilt. Was there some part that I played in not communicating to my loved one that I cared about them?
And anger.
And anger, yes. So such a tangle. And I felt this tangle.
Yeah.
And eventually I was able to talk about that tangle as this octopus that had kind of taken lodging within me and was squeezing my lungs and making it harder to breathe deeply and was kind of in my gut and making it hard to really eat well. And so finding a language for that was an example of how I began to find a way to speak about myself to loved ones so they could perhaps better understand what was going on.
Adriana McKinnon at the Bereavement Center, why was this a good fit?
We know that psychotherapy, talk therapy is very effective for most people. But we also know that children, they don't necessarily have a vocabulary to express grief, emotions, and feelings. And so this is why alternative expressive therapies are so important for the healing journey. Because they allow the child to find a safe space where they can process their grief. And so we always look, especially working with children, at what are some other alternatives to the therapy that can be appropriate for those who doesn't necessarily want to verbalize or can verbalize their grief. This can happen also with adults. It's very, very, very hard to talk about your loved one. It's difficult, it hurts, and a lot of adults experience flashbacks, the trauma, specifically in cases of death by suicide. And so oftentimes the person doesn't want to talk because it's so painful. They're reliving the death of their loved one all over again. And so a beautiful alternative is, can you put it in words? Can you put it in colors? Can you put it in a sculpture? Can you put it in music? Can you dance to it? And so those are such a beautiful way to heal.
I do want to mention that the Bereavement Center of South Texas is going to be having an event this Sunday. That's at 205 West Alma Street here in San Antonio, where there will be a book reading, mm-hmm. and the books will be available there. It'll be an open house at the Bereavement Center. If you've ever wondered if the Bereavement Center, if there's a space for you, if you want, I've always wanted to go there, you wondered about it, maybe this is an opportunity for you just to do a visit and see if this is a place that you might find something that calls out to you. They have this event this Sunday from 11:30 to 1 p.m., and it's free, open to the public, right?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
All right, so we want to make sure that people know about that, and we will be mentioning that again throughout the hour, but we're going to take a break here, and we come back. We're going to be hearing more from Sarah Sweet Dimitru about her book, Words Make a Way Through Fire, Healing After My Brother's Suicide. And our phone lines are open. We do want to hear from our listeners about their grief, their loss. When did you decide to stop, tuning it out? When did you stop running away from the grief and then you turn towards it so you could finally find some peace? That's part of the process as well. You can call in at 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
Listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about healing from loss, healing from the suicide of a loved one. There is never actually a complete healing. There may be forms of healing or getting to a healing. We recognize that there is no closure. It's never complete, but we're just talking about just finding a way towards a process and towards a journey. And that in itself is success in a way, because you've been given something that is impossible to fathom, impossible to understand, and you'll be trying to figure it out for the rest of your life. But you can just get closer. That's all you can get. And so we're talking about that today. The number is 833-TPR-TALK. If you want to call in, 833-877-8255. We want to talk about this as a community and learn from each other. And if we can't help each other, then what are we doing? That's what we're here for, okay? And the book is Words Make a Way Through Fire, Healing After My Brother's Suicide. Cyrus Sweet Dimitri is with us. It's her new book. And she's working with the South Texas Bereavement Center. They're having a book launch this Sunday about that. And really quickly, I do want to go to Adriana McKinnon, the program officer at the Bereavement Center. So just to that point, though, and then we'll hear more from Syra about, you know, a lot of people spend a lot of energy just trying to run away from figuring it out. How do you convince people to stop with, you know, there's lots of things, you know, alcohol, drugs, other, you know, behavior, destructive, self-destructive behavior, maybe. Yeah. How do you convince people it's time to actually come to some sort of agreement with your grief?
So we have a lot of conversations about how grief is a individual and personal journey for each one of us. There is a journey that we, each one of us individually, are walking through. And like any other journey, you have highs and lows. You have days where you experience happiness, and then there are days where you are very sad. There is days where you actually enjoy life, and then there is other days where you feel depressed and discouraged. It is a journey. And our work as therapists is to walk that journey alongside with clients. We also remind clients to be gentle with themselves and not to be so hard on them. Because people oftentimes feel, I have to get over this. I must be doing something. I need to get help. I need to stop crying. I need to do something. I need to stop being isolated. I need to do something. And it's a natural process that we all feel. Grief is universal and we all experience it. So I always tell caregivers and adults, like, don't be so hard on yourself. It takes time. It is a process. Be gentle with yourself. And it's okay to have days where you cry. It's okay to have days where you enjoy life again after a dead loss. And all those feelings and emotions can coexist with each other. And it's okay to feel all the feelings and all the emotions all together at one time. Don't get discouraged.
Syra, in your book, one of the things I appreciate is that you offer up very beginning sympathy for people who just don't get poetry.
Yes.
I appreciate that. But you tell a story that about your the loss of your brother and how he died and how you witnessed that and the how you've had to carry that for the rest of your life and you've come. Can you talk about how you have been dealing with this for almost your entire life?
Yes. Thank you. So this is radio, and radio is a great place to read poetry. So I would like to share a poem that I think speaks directly to that question. And I think it speaks directly to what Adriana was speaking of earlier, too, in how do we find our how do we find that conversation with ourselves that tells us that we need some help in dealing with our grief? And that was that, and to deal with it creatively, there was certainly a turning point for myself, and this poem reflects that. So I lost my brother when I was 16, and I was in college a year and a half later, had not had the benefit of therapy or Children's Bereavement Center, and I was overwhelmed by all the feelings I had and by the pain and the confusion, and I was numbing myself with alcohol and with other substances, and I recognized I was going down a path that was not a healthy path. And this poem made it very, very clear to me. So one day, this poem just started talking to me, and I wrote it down. So it's called The Faceless Day. I awake one morning to find I have no face. It mocks me in the corner. I move to claim it. Like a snail, it creeps up the wall to the ceiling and glares upside down. What have I done to deserve such treatment? I try to cry, but I have no lips, no tongue, no throat or teeth. I can merely stamp my feet. You are too cruel to yourself, my face replies. I can't connect with you. I do trust my instincts. I stand on a chair, yank down my face by the hair, and fasten it to my neck. We'll try it your way. But I can't move. I don't know what to do. Right, then, you fool, claims my face. And in between the lines and loops of W's, I find a bug no bigger than an eyelash, who brashly swears it is my instinct. Desperate, I swallow it. Goes down smooth. There are no symbols, no flashing lights, just a whir in the shadows. Well, when I read this poem that just kind of wrote itself on the page, I thought, okay, yeah, I think we're moving in a direction, Syra, that's not healthy. You are drinking too much. And this poem is reminding you how important your writing is. And I was fortunate enough to be taking a poetry writing class at the university at that time. And this poem was telling me that I needed a creative path forward, and that my creative path was going to be writing. And I made a commitment to my writing as a result of that poem, and just taking it much more seriously and writing in my journal more and paying more attention in my poetry writing class, and just continued that commitment on and on. And I would say with every poem that I wrote, that I have been writing over the decades, it's as if each poem just gave me, I think, a little more insight, a little more recognition of my own inner strength. And I learned to trust myself all over again by spending the time that it takes to sit down and write a poem. For me, the loss of my brother to suicide and the fact that I was with him, the last person who talked to him, undermined my sense of trustworthiness in myself. So the poetry writing process and its revelation and its beauty and its insights, and allowing me to connect to the instincts of my soul, which is healing, gave me the confidence, poem by poem by poem, to continue on the creative path and to begin to name all the different tentacles of the octopus. And eventually that octopus crawled out and found some other ocean to swim around and opened up a lot of just breathing room within myself.
Well, did you sit down and say, I'm going to write a poem about my grief? Or you just say, I'm just going to be here still, and I have a piece of paper and I have a pen here, and you just start writing, and this is what reveals itself.
It's more what you just described. I begin, a poem usually begins itself in me. I hear the words. The words begin. So in that particular poem, it began with, I wake one day to find I don't have a face. And then I'm writing to find out, well, what comes next? Where is this going? And it's a process of listening and I think receiving the natural wisdom and insight that I believe exists inside all of us. It's creating the environment by which we're quiet enough and feel safe enough to listen and then to allow that to come forth, whether it's coming forth in words or in colors, if it's painting or steps in a dance. It's being very tuned inwardly.
Well, what about being able to write things that you would never tell anybody? Being brutally honest with yourself, and no one ever has to see it,
yes,
or read it,
yeah,
but you just being able to process it.
Yes, and to be really honest with yourself about exactly what you feel and not needing to protect anybody or, just writing the hard truths, yes. And then I think by doing that for myself, then I can admit all the more that those hard truths exist. And there's a certain emotional energy that I expend in the sheer process of the physical act of writing that helps to kind of quiet the disquiet within.
And we spend so much energy lying to ourselves frequently. Mm. So, you know, and that makes getting to healing very almost impossible, I would say.
Well, and I think I would say I think there's a lot of energy we can spend what we might think is protecting ourselves, and it can be protective. If we're putting certain experiences into rooms and not feeling like we're able to go look at them and talk with them and see what they might have to teach us, but when they're very scary or traumatic images, we need help. We need support. We need to have people around us who will, we know, won't judge us and who will hold us if we need holding, which I think goes back again to the therapeutic support of places like the Children's Bereavement Center.
The event that happened 50 years ago, your mm-hmm. brother's suicide, and are you still writing about it today?
I don't need to write about this story really anymore. I mean, here I am talking about it, hopefully for the purpose of encouraging other people to use writing in the arts as healing. No, it's made in by processing it through the writing, it's made room for me to write about lots of other things, like the full moon rising a couple of nights ago, my children, their births, their growing up, the daily events, the quiet beauties that are everywhere. I've been able to expand the subject matters that I write about, yes.
And so I guess is that a success that you're now moving on to other things?
Oh, I feel I have a flourishing life, and that is a deep sense of satisfaction. I trust myself. I trust my instincts. I have incredible friends, incredible family. I have enough strength and resilience and I think experience to offer some of what I know about writing as healing to others. And I find immense joy in watching, being in the room when someone else is healing from their experience. May I read another poem?
Well, actually, I got to hit a break here. So we'll get to the other poem. We want to talk more about the bereavement center and how the bereavement center came to work with you on the book and having it launched and the event that's going to be happening this Sunday at 11:30 to 1 p.m. at the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas. That's on Alma Street. And there'll be books and there'll be a reading. And so that's going to be happening. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255. If anyone wants to call in to talk about their experience reading poetry, their own writing their own poetry, doing anything that helps you process and move forward with grief and suicide of grief. The number again, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Words make a way through fire, healing after my brother's suicide. It's a new book by Cyrus Sweet Dimitru. She is a well-known San Antonio poet and author. And the book is being released in partnership with the South Texas Children's Bereavement Center. And we're talking about that today, about how writing poetry, journaling, all sorts of activities, art, music, ways that can bring about a healing. But it's a process, and it helps to have someone, experts, help you get there. And that's what we have at the Bereavement Center, a great resource that we have here in San Antonio. And they have been helpful in Uvalde. They've been helpful in Kerr County with the flooding event they've had there. Maybe we'll hear more about that. But right now, let's go ahead and hear from a listener. We have Rose on the line. And Rose, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I know a young man. He'll be 31 this year. But when he was 11, his mom was murdered, and he was in the apartment when it all happened. But he never got the type of support that a place like the Bereavement Center would offer a youth. But is the Bereavement Center a place even for a 31-year-old to get a start, if I could get him to that place?
Rose, thank you for the call. Adriana McKinnon is the chief program officer at the Bereavement Center.
I will say, please share our information with this young adult. We have an incredible team of therapists that we, including myself, I'll be happy to talk to this young adult. We primarily provide services for children ages 3 to 24, but we also know that there is a lot of adults that they have not had an opportunity to grieve or receive support services. And so we want to talk to those adults and connect them with support services. It really is never too late. And if we can reach out and share information, resources, and we can just sit down and most of the times just to sit and listen to what this young adult may want to share in a safe space, we can absolutely do that.
Now, Syra, you wanted to read a poem. We're going to break, so let's get back to it.
Thank you. I wanted to read a poem that was inspired by a observation that I made while volunteering a number of years ago at the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas. And I think it will give listeners a snapshot of how children can process what they're feeling through play, what seems like play, perhaps on the outside. They're really doing a lot of internal work. So this is called At the Children's Bereavement Center of South Texas. In the room where a long bridge is painted across a wall, two girls kneel beside a white ambulance. One says, "This father died." Her sister closes the plastic man within a tiny coffin, finds it too big to fit inside the ambulance, places it instead on the white roof Together, they push the toy to the cemetery beneath the bridge. Unload.
And you saw that event?
I was privileged enough to be in the room while they were having this kind of play, and just watching how they were kind of symbolically, I assume they were talking about their own father's death. I don't know, but I suspect that was that they were girls whose father had died and probably had been to a cemetery, and that they were just processing some of these images from their own life and trying to make sense out of it, and doing it together in this safe space. And one of the details you might have noticed in the poem is the room that they're in. There is a bridge painted on the wall. So one of the really, I think, healing aspects of the space at the Children's Bereavement Center is the beauty with which the entire environment is presented, the murals on the wall, the colors. I don't know, Adriana, you might want to speak about some of that, or the role of beauty in art. And
yeah.
And how do you craft this space that invites children to be at ease and to engage in that therapeutic play?
Yeah, I believe the center has been very intentional in putting together a healing space for children, specifically, where they can feel safe and it can be fun and colorful. Because oftentimes grief is related to grim and dark and hidden and not spoken, not seen. And so in our efforts to normalize grief, we want to talk about grief in spaces where we can enjoy moments of happiness, where we can play, where we can just be children, and we don't have to worry and carry that burden of the death. So the spaces are very intentional, because after all, these are children. And we want to offer them a space where they can just be children, even if it's for the hour that they are in therapy, because we know that after they leave the center, they're going to come back and face the death loss. So very intentional, but also trauma-informed care comes into place, because we also want to offer a therapeutic place where they can learn new skills and they can speak about their loved one and find ways that they can honor their loved one and connect, find new connections with their loved one. So we will always remember our loved one because we have learned new connections. And so very intentional, very, very intentional, thinking about children and how grief impacts them in a different way.
Sarah, you have been trained as to do poetry as medicine. what does that mean? How does that work? How does that enter into this?
Yes, so I am certified as a practitioner of poetic medicine, which was a process of study and some practice that took about 3.5 years through an institute for poetic medicine that's based in California. And the idea is that poetry is something that exists naturally within all of us. If we use the definition of the honest expression of our heart and our mind just coming forth as words on paper, and we are trained as practitioners to choose poems that will kind of meet people where they are, that we're meeting with either as individuals or in a small group. And the poems that we would bring into a community would be poems that are very, that they can identify with, that are accessible. And the images in the poems or the memories that are being explored in the poem, depending on the poem, begins to do what I call seed the air, S-E-E-D. And those images and memories begin to just kind of fill the room because we read the poems aloud. And then the individuals in the room are beginning to make their own connections with those images and memories. And then there's a process, a point in the gathering. I call them poetry circles. There's a point in the circle where everyone's invited to do some writing and has some time. And then they go quietly to their own space and they can pull lines from the poem, or they might begin with a memory that's been stirred by the poems that we've been, that we've read and read aloud. And then we kind of come back to the circle, and anyone who wishes to can read their poem aloud, and we simply receive it and respond to what we hear, respond to the feelings in the poem. And it's a way of people being very honest with themselves first and foremost, and the feelings they've brought to the page. And if they choose to share it, it's a way of them being bringing their feelings into the community, and then feeling that the community is affirming and often identifying with those feelings. It's very, very empathic and supportive. And I do this work every third Saturday at the Ecumenical Center. And there in the medical center, it's open to adults of any walk of life on third Saturdays from 10 to about 1 o'clock. We just ask that people register for that. Let us know that you're coming. And it's people unpack whatever they might want to unpack, whether it's bereavement or anxiety or joy, whatever is very much on their hearts and minds in that particular moment. And the poem is just a way to give it voice.
Well, it does seem we have a part of our brain that our society wants to have walled off. And by accessing poetry, say, I'm going to try to get into that area that I'm, you know, that it's very difficult. If you live in a concrete sort of world and say, let's get on the other side where our feelings do have value, our instincts, you know, are telling me something, let's give them a chance to be heard, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's important work that you're doing there. Mm-hmm. And again, where would you go to engage?
So this is the Ecumenical Center there in the medical center itself.
And where
it's
online,
a counseling center.
Is there anything online to find out about?
Yes. You could just go to just input the Ecumenical Center. It's a counseling center, a nonprofit counseling center.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to come back. We'll talk more about the bereavement center and about the book. Words Make a Way Through Fire. Our phone lines are open. 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. Source continues after a 1 minute break. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The South Texas Children's Bereavement Center is having a book launch this Sunday for Words Make a Way Through Fire, Healing After My Brother's Suicide by Cyrus Sweet Dimitru. And they're in the studio today, and we're talking about grief and learning to live with grief. It's never going to go away. We just have to figure out a way to understand and have a partnership with grief. We don't want to forget. We want to remember in a way that is positive and allows us to continue. And you can call in with your questions and comments, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. So Cyrus Sweet Dimitru, one of the characters in your memoir is voice. Tell me about voice.
I love that you refer to voice as a character, really. Thank you, David. Voice. Okay, so voice. And this is voice with a capital V. So voice first spoke to me. So voice is literally that. It's a voice that I have come to associate with the creator. It is a sacred, transcendent, loving presence that does not have physical form. And literally a voice first spoke my name and directly to me a few minutes before I understood that my brother, David, had taken action that was going to cost him his life. This was in our family home, and I was looking in the mirror, brushing my teeth. I was getting ready to go to a football game with my boyfriend, I thought, and I knew that my brother was very very depressed and in a difficult space. But I was going to the football game. I mean, I was going to the basketball game. I was getting ready to go. So I was looking in the mirror, and I could hear him outside the window in pain. And I knew that he had done this difficult act. And this voice spoke to me in the mirror and also in my head, and called me by name and said, "Syra, this is going to be very difficult for you. You're going to have to go out, and part of you is going to have to go out and do what you can for your brother, and part of you is going to have to hide. But someday this will all come full circle." And that prepared me as much as anything could to go outside and do what I could for my brother, which wasn't much besides go to the neighbors and call for an ambulance. But I felt like that voice made a promise to me that the shattering that occurred during that traumatic night was there was going to be some kind of process by which the pieces of me would come together over time. And I believe that's very much what has happened through my writing process, through my healing process. I have voices showed up a number of times since then and spoken very directly to me. I understand it as, I would call it the voice of the creator, the voice of the universe that really believes in our healing, wants to be part of our healing. If I can make space for that healing to come through and be open to a spiritual instinct and guidance from within, and it's not an easy thing to talk about because it's invisible and mystical, but it's very real, very, very real. And
You've talked about voice, I'm sure, with other people before. Have people told you, "I have voice as well"? I mean, I have voice too. Mm-hmm. So usually telling me to go over there and apologize to somebody for something that I do, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm always, you know, putting my foot in my mouth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, and it's that's like that guy who tells me to do those things, I need to listen to him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what about, you know, do people have voice, everybody?
I don't know for sure. I figure if I have voice, I don't think I'm special in that way. I figure most people do.
But we have to learn to listen to it.
Speaking for myself, my discernment process is, what is the intentionality of this voice? Is it for creativity? Is it for connection? Is it affirming? Is it in the best interest of everyone, not only myself? I think we have to use discernment, certainly.
So you said earlier there was no bereavement center type thing when you were growing up in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. going through this terrible traumatic event. Was there anyone who reached out to you? Was an effort to give you some sort of counseling or anything at all after your brother's suicide?
Not in that regard. I had really wonderful friends, who did what they could to just make clear that they loved me and they were there for me. But it was 10 years before I received counseling that I sought directly. And it was very, very helpful. It was helpful.
Right. So, I mean, what a wonderful institution that we have here the South Texas Children's Bereavement Center.
It is one of the jewels of our city, yes.
And so Adriana McKinnon at the Bereavement Center, you know, what you're trying to do is when children, I mean, in today's age, I mean, holy cow, these kids are dealing with so much. Mm-hmm. How could we not have a bereavement center, a place where we have trained individuals, spaces, and all this expertise there to help them? So how does that happen?
It's such a unique place. I agree with you. It's very unique. It's so intentional. But also, I can speak about the high level of our clinical services, which is delivered in just such a high quality of trauma-informed clinical services, very much appropriate for children. We have the best therapist, knowledgeable, experienced. All we do is train in and learn about death, loss, and how children grieve. It's such an important organization in the community. Because, yes, we are the only ones doing this kind of work here. But also, the fact that the Bereavement Center is free, so our services are 100% free. And so that's such an amazing and incredible mission, because we're just not able to provide a very high-level, specialized grief therapy support services, but also families can access the services for free. And it's just such an incredible place, so needed, because we specifically work with death loss cases, but we also work with a lot of death caused by violence. We work a lot of cases of death by suicide. We work with very, very complicated cases involving a lot of trauma. And so what we do is specialize in so needed in our community. And we want more families to reach out to us and come over for services. It really never too late. If your loved one died a few days ago or a few years ago, you know, there is always a space for grief support services with us.
Syra, did anyone ever tell you, as you've spent years dealing with your brother's suicide, to get over it? You know, just move on. It happened. Why are you still in this, reliving this moment over again? How is telling someone get over it not helpful?
Oh, I think that is such an unkind thing to say. Fortunately, I really have no memory of anybody speaking to me in that way. I'm so grateful. I just think that's someone who doesn't really understand or doesn't want to, feels threatened by someone else's grief. Those we grieve for, we love them. We are still in relationship with our loved ones who have passed. And I think love is a really important feeling and a really important relationship to support. And someone who might speak that way to you, if someone experiences someone speaking that way, I would suggest that you just turn around and walk away and go stand by someone who will comfort you and know that your feelings are absolutely true and real and important and to be honored. And that's just not, that person is not not someone who can honor your feelings in that moment.
It is impossible. To get over it. That's just not something that can be done. What we need to do is figure out how to have a relationship with our grief.
Yes.
And it can be happening at the bereavement center. So is that something that y'all work on?
Yes, Adriana? Absolutely. I think one of the worst things that can happen is that we forget our loved ones. We want to honor them. We want to remember them. We want to continue creating new connections. Yeah. With our loved ones, and we want to honor them. We have a memory wall at the center where at the end of therapy, a lot of the children that we serve, they place a picture of their loved one at the center. And from then on, we are going to be honoring their loved one for a long time.
I want to thank you for coming in today and talking to us. Syra Sweet Dimitru, book is Words Make a Way Through Fire, Healing After My Brother's Suicide. And Adriana McKinnon, the program officer at the South Texas Children's Bereavement Center. Thank you both for being here. The book launch is this Sunday, 11:30 to 1 o'clock at the Bereavement Center. Thank you all so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.